to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
What is up, friends? Welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, Wiley Coyote, hamburger haberdasher, and food pornographer. Every week, I'm also here with Eddie Kim.
Thanks. Yeah, I know. I'm not sitting in my normal seat. We're looking at each other.
It's messing me up. We're both wearing sunglasses. We're taking a cue out of a Tom Tseitsma's book.
Yeah. This is very adversarial right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of me versus you right now.
Okay. I'm Eddie Kim, proud DCist, chaotic neutral, and now that it's fall, a Canadian tuxedo aficionado.
Yeah, nice. I have to say, ever since Tom Tseitsma was in the studio, my life has been changed forever. Now, every night at the restaurant, I see a baby, you know, or an old lady, and I think it's Tom in disguise, so... Just be wary out there. If you didn't listen to it, we had a really fun time with Tom. He's a super nice guy. We really appreciated him coming on.
Tom is everywhere. Or just assume he's everywhere.
He's everywhere.
Every week, we share a shift drink and swap some war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, brewers, food critics, whoever may be in town, and anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry.
Today we're doing kind of a little different. I don't know how many of you last week were able to catch Rene Redzepi and Mr. David Zilbert, who were in town doing a presentation on the new book, the Noma Fermentation Cookbook. Is that what it's called?
I think it's a Noma Guide to Fermentation.
Yeah, I messed that one up.
It's a bright orange book. It's beautiful.
It's amazing.
To be honest, I think, and I've already talked to some chefs, it's going to be probably the next major textbook that's a required reading for a lot of, for any kitchen.
Yeah, and it's also good for reading in bed, which is what I've been doing.
Oh, ew. That turns you on? Garum's turn you on?
That, it doesn't have to turn me on to read it in bed.
Pillow fermentation?
It does, yeah. Oh. But before we dig into that little bite... let's do a little weekend recap, shall we?
Yeah, what happened? What's been happening the past 2 weeks? I've been binging on Simon Nosrat's Netflix series, Salt, Fat, Acid, and Heat. That premiered a couple of weeks ago.
Kind of just the food friend you want to have and the person you want to eat with.
And everyone's going crazy over it. Yeah. Everyone is really appreciating it. I mean, Simon is not the typical person that you see in a food show. But she is super lovable.
Yeah. No, it's really
and
fun.
And her reactions to whatever she eats, it's super genuine. No, it's great. It's four parts. Everyone see it. You learn a lot. I think the first episode, Fat, is my favorite. So
right on. Speaking of Netflix, The Final Table is coming out this month now, I guess November, with Johnny Sparrow, our very own.
People Magazine nominee for hottest chef in America.
Yep.
But Johnny Sparrow will be in it. It is, I believe, hosted or emceed by Andrew Knowlton of Bon Appetit magazine. So it's going to be a pretty fun show. Let's see what happens.
I think it's going to be awesome. And yeah, Johnny Sparrow has just opened up his new restaurant, Reverie. So if you haven't been over there yet, definitely go check it out.
Oh, and congratulations to Johnny.
New Bambino.
New baby.
Recent article says you're literally sprinkling plastic on your food. 92% of all salt brands that were checked for plastics in their salt contain plastic. That's crazy.
Yeah. I had an incident recently where this probably wasn't what it had meant to do, but yeah, I actually ate a piece of plastic.
You were going for plastic and actually got salt in your
ate a piece of plastic in a pot de creme.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But it happens.
It does happen.
Like bugs.
Researchers whose findings last year pointed to a downside from raising the minimum wage have taken another look, and the reality is more nuanced, says Eddie Kim.
Yeah. I read this article. It's from the New York Times. A lot of the data that was used in the minimum wage pro and anti arguments came from this study in Seattle that said that raising the minimum wage would mean less money overall for hospitality workers. But now they just kind of reversed their findings. Well, they didn't reverse it. They just said they re-looked at it, did some more, gathered more data, and now they say it's probably going to increase wages a little bit. It's all still very ambiguous.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot up in the air. Well, let's cut to our interview with David Zilber. We were over at the Watergate Hotel, which I've never been to. Have you?
Yes.
Super bougie.
It's very bougie. It's very nice. It's nice enough for Gal Gadot.
Yeah, I think
Gal Gadot. Gal Gadot to film Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
So they filmed it there. Anyways.
So anyways, without further ado, David Zilber. Full Service Radio. Hey friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from, well, this time, Watergate. We're mixing it up a little bit. Matthew Ramsey, Wiley Coyote, Hamburger Haberdasher, and Culinary Curioso.
I am Eddie Kim, proud DCist, writer, and kind of bartender about town. All right, every week we share a Shift Drink and swap war stories from behind the line with chefs, bartenders, bakers, and brewers, and pretty much anyone who touches this all-encompassing industry. Okay, so we've traded, today we've traded one lobby for another hotel lobby. We've left our comfy little aquarium bubble at the Lion Hotel, and we're camped out at the Watergate to speak with fermentation guru David Zilber. He's a walking Wikipedia? I'll say encyclopedia.
Well, he's been dubbed walking Wikipedia. Walking Wikipedia. We're just propagating that.
Photographer and director of the Fermentation Lab at Noma, and most recently co-author of the new Noma Guide to Fermentation with Renee Redzepi. Welcome.
Hi.
All right.
Thanks for having me.
First off, congratulations. This book is already a game changer, it seems like. It's a super fascinating read, and it holds your hands step by step. Super inspiring.
Thank you.
Well done. How long, what was the process like this, like on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd never written a book before, and I remember the day, it must have been almost, probably getting up to 2.5 years ago now, that Renee kind of very energetically burst into the old fermentation lab, this construction of shipping containers that we had in the old parking lot behind the old Noma in Copenhagen. And he's like, guys, we're doing a book. And we're like, okay. And he's like, but it shouldn't just be my voice, you know? It's like, I can't do what you guys do in here, so who's going to write it? And then I guess I was there at the time, and it was on me to pen this down. And I learned a lot about my own craft in the process. I've probably extended the scope of my knowledge about the things I did on a daily basis by having to write this book, which I found super inspiring and kind of fueled me during the process. And the other thing to note is that, you know, I haven't been at Noma since the beginning. You know, there's only a handful of people who've been there since day one and seen the whole evolution. And while there are some very long tenured chefs, no one's been there from like the get-go. So I was also tasked with kind of being this investigative journalist and kind of uncovering Noma's oral history.
That's cool.
Of fermentation itself. And that also taught me a lot about my job and, you know, where these ideas came from and what situations the chefs were in when a lot of these things came to fruition.
Noma's been open for 15 years.
For 15 years, yeah.
And November, you've been there for 5 years.
I've been there for
almost 5 years. There's a 10-year gap where you weren't there. So you're saying you had to go back and kind of rediscover.
Yeah, I would go visit old chefs and interview them and be like, okay, what was happening at that time?
Ah, cool.
Or like, why did this come about? And even talking with Renee about that process.
Kind of like an Indiana Jones fermentologist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Archaeologist. That's really cool. I mean, 2 years, that's quite a process. I mean, I can only imagine you're driven by your... there's no sauerkraut in this book.
It's not
quick pickles. It's pretty, like, deep dives into some fermentation stuff that's pretty unknown to, I'd say, most people.
Yeah.
Myself included.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, at last night's lecture, you made a significant point multiple times that there was no sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
This is...
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, yeah. He literally said, like, this is, there's no recipe for sauerkraut because you're teaching the principles of fermentation. Are you expecting people to buy this book already with a firm grasp of, or a step of knowledge a little bit higher than your typical home cook?
I would say so. Yeah. I think, you know, your typical home cook probably, you know, as famous as Noma is, it's not that famous. It's not a household name. So, yeah, it's probably not... The person who buys this book might not be... It's probably not going to be their first cookbook. That's for sure. We're probably aiming at a target audience here of people who are already ambitious, who already enjoy cooking their own food, and maybe want to take that a step further.
But it now, is... Yeah, sorry.
It's
accessible. It's more so exactly. than the actual Noma cookbook. It even shows you how to build your own fermentation...
Little incubating chamber for any molds super you might cool. want to grow. And that was also a big impetus in the book. You know, Renee definitely lamented a bit that the fact that no one's ever come up to him on the street and said, hey, I cooked that dish from page 73 from the Big Gray Noma book. Like, that has never happened to him. And that book has sold, you know, like, tens and tens of thousands of copies.
Right. On the other hand, though, on one of your Instagram posts, you did say that you're really proud that your own chefs actually using the book.
In
the kitchen.
For sure. And that just goes to, you know, I grew up in a world where your head chef would keep his recipe box, you know, with all the cue cards of things that he stole from his chef locked up in the counter.
Yep.
And you weren't allowed to see them. And if there was a menu change, then you would get to know how he makes that one sauce. And that was, there was this
lock box. Okay.
No, seriously, like chefs for a long time didn't care about sharing. And I think a lot of chefs to this day feel a bit of protective about their hard work and what they have to go through to reach the levels that they're at.
Especially when you're literally creating new techniques, right? Like you're breaking new ground.
Exactly. And, that's, you know, like no one undercuts Noma's R&D. No one else is paying my salary, but, you know, just the guests coming in our doors.
Right.
And it is expensive to have in a restaurant that has 12 tables, you know, a team of four people just dedicated to doing nothing that's going to be on the menu this year.
That's absolutely ludicrous.
You know, so that is a big commitment. But I very much thank Renee for believing that pure R&D doesn't just pay itself off in terms of what we're serving next year or the year after that, but feeds back into the industry and pays it forward.
Before we go forward, I think we're going to try to fit one game in.
Real quick.
One real quick game that Matthew likes to play in his kitchens. So
it's called Two Truths, One Lie. Basically, you tell us two things that are true and one falsehood, and we will try to figure out what is the lie.
To get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, to be fair, I always get this one wrong.
So. Fair enough. Okay. I'll keep it on topic. Fermentation is easy.
Why?
Oh, wow.
I'll give you all three, though. Don't. Fermentation is easy. Next up, I would say fermentation is hard. And my favorite color is orange.
Wow.
Okay. Wow.
So we're looking at a book, The Noma Guide to Fermentation. It literally has orange banding on it. Fermentation is hard. That's a fact. Fermentation is easy, perhaps.
I mean, I went to the lecture last night, so I might have a leg up based off of what you said.
I'm guessing it's the color. I don't know, though.
I'm going to say it's the color.
Okay,
yeah.
We're going with the color.
You hate orange, don't you?
No, I love orange.
Oh, you love orange?
Fermentation is hard.
I was just saying, was there something like Renee wanted to fuck around you with?
Well, maybe I turned your own game on your head, because I would say that the first two are both true and false at the same time.
Okay.
So maybe it's a half truth and a half truth and a truth.
There we go. That's it. It's a new game.
We still got it wrong, though.
So yeah.
Maybe there was no right answer. Yeah. No, but I think maybe I was just playing with you guys there to really drive the point home that fermenting can be hard. You know, sometimes it is a lot of work to, like, put together a cabinet and try and grow your own mold. And you're like, what am I doing? This is insane. My wife thinks I've gone off the rails. And,
yeah, my fiance, you know, said, I'm growing mushrooms right now, and I'm making black shallots.
Yeah.
And I was like, really excited to find the book you guys are doing, like Black Apples and stuff like that. Exactly. I didn't even thought about that. And I was like, oh my God. I thought I was cool for doing Black Shallots. And
Matthew, you're also doing a really shitty, I tasted it. Remember you tasted me?
On oh yeah, I'm making some horrible wine right now. That's also like in
it's really bad.
Yeah, it's not good yet.
Oh, just distill Process. It into booze. Yeah. Make wrap up.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting there. One step at a time. One misstep at a time.
I also brought another fermentation book, The Art of Fermentation.
Yep. Sitting on the table.
Mr. Katz.
Also orange.
Also orange.
Coincidental, honestly. That was that. While it is my favorite color, complete coincidence.
With the color of fermentation. This came out several years ago. He came out with two books. And the whole pantheon of all the books about fermentation, where does yours stand? Because there's already been great reviews saying like this is kind of the new gold standard of just cooking books in general. Where do you see yours, your legacy, I guess, at the moment?
We just wanted to, I mean, the goal of the book was always very clear. You know, it's like we will tell people how to do the things we do. We'll make it as clear and concise as if we were handing out recipes to the chefs for a new menu in our own restaurant, and we didn't want them to fail. Because why would you? Why would you be vague? Why would you leave doubt? You know, if you want these people to succeed. And I do write all the recipes at the restaurant for just internally. You know, when there's a menu change, that's me who's doing those. And you learn very quickly what people are receptive to, how to communicate. So just with those two things alone is like, be concise, be clear, don't leave room for mistakes or doubt, and just put Noma's visions and philosophies out there. I don't want to say the book wrote itself, because it was definitely a lot of work and a lot of edits, but it always had a very clear guiding light, if you will.
Yeah.
What this is to the world, beyond that, if we help to demystify, if we help to make people feel more confident in fermenting and get people to get over that initial hump.
Shine a light in those dark
to get over corners. The fermentation is hard part and see that fermentation is easy, then we've done something, and that's all I can ask for.
Cool. There's, I mean, you guys do a lot of, I mean, it's R&D. There's research, there's experimentation. Do you have a background at all in science or any of that?
I have a high school diploma, and I read a lot of books.
Yeah.
And I haven't read a book of fiction in probably a decade, but that doesn't stop
Harry
me from
Potter
reading.
Misses you.
That doesn't stop me from reading like a book a month, and just my own curiosity, you know, trying to understand how systems work, you know, kind of getting into the machinery of things and looking at the cogs.
Yeah.
And that can range from economics to, you know, physics to cosmology to anthropology to natural history. You know, it all fascinates me, and I think that I was put in the lab because I had this very strong just basic understanding of things, and it wasn't hard for me to parlay that to a world of fermentation.
We're not going to do a rapid fire, but there's one question I do like to ask is, well, ask, it would be a two-parter. If it weren't fermentation, what else would you be doing in the kitchen? And if it weren't in the kitchen, what else would you be doing instead?
Well, I mean, I started at Noma as a cook on the line, as a chef de partie on the cold section, you know, slicing, roasting beets, building salads on the barbecue, roasting bone marrow and wild greens. Like, that's what I've done my whole life until my life changed and I started working in the lab doing something very different in food. I'd probably still be cooking, and I'd be very happy. You know, it's always brought me joy, both creatively and just like as labor to do something and see the results and put in a hard day's work and make people happy. If I wasn't in the kitchen, I mean, yes, I am also a photographer, and I do kind of wonder what that parallel universe is like where, you know, I got that one gig that made me like look at cooking and be like, oh, is it worth it? I could just, you know, travel the world and make art for a living. I'd probably... And I still carry my camera with me everywhere I go, but Noma definitely takes up more of my time. But I absolutely love photography as well.
What's your favorite subject to shoot?
That's funny. I mean, I take kind of strange photos, and on more than one occasion, people have called me a garbage photographer. But it's no, it's just the you know, I find funny abstractions in the human landscape and kind of make art from that. Right. And I definitely have a style, you could say that.
Well, I think cooking is one of those things, though. It's an expression, or it's a medium for creative yeah. expression, right? It's just
absolutely.
I find it saying I'm also a photographer and a chef or a cook. Yeah, for me, it's like as long as I'm kind of being creatively engaged in either or, I'm
exactly.
content.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot of experimentation that happens in the fermentation lab, of course. It's not going to all work out. Is there a flop that kind of stands out? Or
oof, yeah, this has come up multiple times on this tour, but blood garum. Do not try and ferment. Do not try and ferment pig's blood.
I was happy to see a whole section about garum. What?
Yeah.
Just real quick.
Garum is, well, I think most people would understand it as the fish sauce you would find in the ethnic foods aisle of your supermarket. But it is the family of fermented condiments, you could say, that fish sauce belongs to. And that is just, you know, fish loaded up with salt, anchovies, sardines, herring you could make it from, and then kind of left to stew in its own juices for months
yeah.
in a warm setting until it breaks down and you create all of these amazing organic chemicals, glutamate, you know, free amino acids that can then go on to season and boost dishes and give it all the umami that you seek.
And this question has something to do with this little deli container that's sitting next to me.
Yeah.
Last night the question did come up about Noma when you went to Mexico and kind of made the somewhat bold statements that there's not much fermented food in Mexico. There are a lot of beverages, a lot of tepache, mezcal,
Mexican
beers. Do you have any ideas of why we have maybe like a fish sauce hasn't come up? Hasn't been created independently.
Yeah. I mean that gets into like questions of anthropology really and you know why certain cultures choose to function the way they do. And choose I use lightly because you know it's like saying that America chose to invent the internet. No, it just kind of came about and then people took to it. The same is true of food technologies around the world. Sometimes people fall in through happy accidents into solutions to problems that they didn't know they had. And then through tradition, those solutions stick around and build themselves out into, you know, the foods of nations. I'm reminded of like an anecdote from like a Native American friend of mine who said, you know, in California, the native tribes that lived there before, you know, European colonists got there didn't really practice that much agriculture because they lived in nature's bounty and there was always something for them to eat in season. And so in some instances, and even though the Maya definitely practice agriculture, maybe the climate helped them to feel less pressure regarding that. I can't really say. I'm no expert on Mayan anthropology or the history of the Yucatan. To bring it back, though,
you guys actually did make a koji mole. In the book.
Yeah.
Which is super fucking
rare. Yeah, it's cheekily dubbed mole, but it does carry a lot of the same weight and the same right. flavors. The flavor it wants to go to is straight for chocolate when you start roasting koji, and it's delicious. You could add some chili cool. to it, and you would have a pretty good cheat.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
That's fun. We had some other fermentation guests on the show, and I was asking them about how to make a corn miso.
Yeah, and then, we just did that.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that in the book. I was like, yes, a step-by-step instruction.
Oh, but that's the masa so. That's okay. Masa. Yeah. So that is, I mean, this isn't a Mexican thing by any means,
right,
ferment is.
But I've been wanting to work that into tortillas because I think there's like some fun applications
it's
there.
It's incredible. It is one of my favorite ferments in this book. You get the best corn you can, you know, nixtamalize it yourself, get the cal or the quick lime, boil it up, let it sit, grind it, and then make your own masa miso. My God, it tastes like fruits that you didn't know existed.
Cool.
That's the beautiful part of fermentation for me is, you know, that mashing up cultures sometimes leads to new discoveries, and that's all Noma's ever done. You look for inspiration abroad, you ask yourself, what grows where I am? And in doing those two things, you create something wholly new.
Yeah, awesome. Well, all the recipes are really fun. What you're doing is essentially laying this, like, super strong foundation of techniques and flavors from which to build with, from lactoferments, the koji molds, the black fruit. It's going to be kind of fun to see all the directions and applications in which people take your recipes.
That's what we wanted.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this quick little thing.
Thank you.
I understand you're on your way to Philly.
I am. About to hop on a train.
All right. So all of our listeners in Philly, which will be not until later. But
lacto-fermented Philly cheesesteaks.
Yeah. Awesome. With Liz.
That joke. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everyone buy the book.
It's awesome. Yeah.
It's awesome. It's going to be, it's definitely going to be a textbook in a lot of kitchens.
Full Service Radio.
All right, that was David Zilber. We caught him over at the Watergate Hotel. Thank you, David. Thank you, Renee. I actually went to the talk that they gave, and it was fun watching a big plume of the
koji,
the aspergillus. They like sprinkled aspergillus over some soybeans, but it went out into the audience like a cloud. I was pretty sure people would freak out, but then I realized half of the crowd were chefs and bartenders. It was probably a really, really nerdy industry crowd.
They just opened their mouths and said.
Yeah. No, it was a great talk. So thanks.
Eddie, before we go here, I have a quick question for you. This is something I've been kind of like thinking about all week. This is an either or situation.
Is this like a marry, fuck, kill for me?
Well, kind of. Okay. Would you rather, and this is like either or, you can only have one or the other for the rest of your life, drink all beer warm and flat, or drink Cosmos.
For the rest of my life?
That's it's the only alcoholic beverage you can consume. Either warm, flat beer of any varietal, or crisp, clean, cold Cosmos.
A perfectly made Cosmo?
Well, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to take the Cosmo.
I mean, think about the Cosmo. You actually have to order it every time you want to ingest alcohol.
Well, now you're just adding more stipulations. No,
I'm just saying I want to make sure you think about this before you, like,
your
life as a Cosmo drinker.
I'm fine with myself ordering a Cosmo at a bar. I don't think I ever have, though, but...
Eddie Kim, a cosmonaut. I mean, I also wouldn't think about like food pairings and like literally anytime you ingest alcohol, it's going to be in the form of a Cosmo.
Warm flat beer is really gross. Right now we are drinking Miller High Lifes.
Yes.
As our shift drink.
Yeah.
Can you imagine drinking this warm and flat? That's gross.
Yeah, but I just feel like Cosmos.
Like body temperature warm, like it's been sitting in between your legs for a while.
Either way, you give up alcohol, I think is the bottom line. Anyways, that was my question. I've been thinking about it all week. Did not think you'd land on the Cosmo side, but I should have guessed.
Okay.
Eddie Kim, cosmonaut. Well, thank you so much for listening this week. You can revisit this week's episodes or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. Also on Spotify. And find us on all the social media as at ShiftDrinkDC.
Don't forget to throw us some shade, a review on iTunes, or give us a 1-star on Yelp.
We haven't checked to see if we're on Yelp yet, are we? Do podcasts actually make Yelp?
Are we doing a live Yelp review?
Anyways, I give us 1-star.
Okay, that's fine. Everyone wants to send a rant of some sort, if you want to call out your restaurant or a person or like a pet peeve,
we'll reread it
on air,
yeah,
anonymously, maybe with like a cartoon voice. I do a pretty good Elmo.
Gross. Now I'm just thinking about Elmo drinking Cosmopolitans.
Isn't it?
All right. Anyways. Okay,
Well, speaking of sound effects, thank you, DJ Ragtech, for our hilarious sound effects. We probably need to ask you for another one for Rants Reread. And a special thank you to Jeffrey Lemro for our intro music and our exit music. Broadcasting live from the Line Hotel. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week.